You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Jeez, it's exciting to be here on another Thursday. You are with The Dice Men Cometh, which is a show all about board games, all about card games, all about role-playing games, all about dice games, tabletop games, anything that is fit to play with your friends and family. I'm Garth.
I'm Mark.
I'm Leon.
And tonight is episode 187.
Woohoo!
Jeez, no wonder we look so old. Well, you two do anyway. Look, I've got nothing for an intro tonight, but to be perfectly honest, we do not have time.
No.
Because, Mark...
Yes.
What have we got on this jam-packed hour of tabletop gaming?
Well, we've got a very exciting PAX Australia 2017 coming up next weekend where going, and no show next Thursday because we're on our way. So this week we're going to give a preview of all the exciting things you should look forward to at PAX.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the Kickstarter that was terminated. We'll talk more about that soon. And I'm going to talk about the amazing game we played this week, Garth. I talked about it a couple of weeks ago that I couldn't wait to play it. Now I've played about it, I'm even more exciting. We can talk about that. Maybe one other small game we played.
Yeah, if we've got
all
time.
All that and so much more. We're going to pack it in.
Oh, we ever not packs it in?
Hilarious.
Oh, Leon, you're here. I didn't realise that.
Yes.
So, look, you are with the Dice Men Cometh. We're going to go to a very quick song. But before we do that, just a big shout out to Area 52 for sponsoring us again this week.
Oh, yes. Elizabeth Street in Hobart.
Now, Leon,
friendly
you said
local
they had,
game store.
They had some extra games come in. Is that right?
Yes, I just saw today. About 4 hours ago, they got the new Star Wars Rebellion expansion and the new Mysterium expansion, which I reckon I'll have to go in and grab myself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, we're going to throw to a song. And then, Mark, well, I think, Leon, you and I can probably just leave the room. Because Mark's going to have a little bit of special quiet time by himself, talking everything Seventh Continent.
Probably a lot safer for us to go away.
Indeed. Yes. So you're with Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. It's the Dice Men Cometh. We'll be back after this song.
Well, that was very Blade Runner-y. That was Black Cab with Prelude on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. This week brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. Go in there and get all the games and the nice service and all the things. Now, we can't muck around because, Mark, your favouritest game of all history of ever we've played. So we should probably let you talk about it while we be very quiet in the corner.
Well,
do you need me to get a box of tissues?
No, it's okay.
Okay, good.
It's okay. Well, look, first of all, first of all, a huge big thanks to you, Leon.
I'm pretty good.
Because you actually bothered to order a copy of The Seventh Continent way back, 18 months ago or more when it first was Kickstarted?
I'm a very good judge of character. Just ask my wife.
And you don't care about character. It's more about the games you choose.
Okay, just ask my wife. I don't know.
No, you picked some good characters on this one. And I remember at the time looking at it thinking, this sounds really interesting. I'm broke. Leon will back it.
Yes, that is generally where I slot into the arrangement around.
And then before it arrived, obviously the second Kickstarter had started. By this time, there was quite a bit of interest. And I think when I looked at it, it might have only been a couple of days old, but already it was up to over $1 million. And I watched a couple of videos and I thought, this is a hype train I need to jump on. Obviously, I've talked a whole lot about it. And as we speak, the second Kickstarter, where you can get the expansion or the full game or both, is coming to an end in 12, 13 hours. Now, as we speak, it's raised $6.4 million. Probably by the time this show's finished, it'll clock over the $6.5 million.
And how many of those are yours, Mark?
Yeah, 5 million maybe.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Over 40,000 backers, which is just phenomenal.
That's insane.
And so by the time you're listening to this, it will have finished, so too bad you missed out.
Yeah.
Or congratulations, you made the right choice.
And I must say, a big well done to the company behind Seventh Continent, because releasing the expansion a month after the original arrives and got glowing reviews is the smartest Kickstarter thing I think I've ever seen done.
Yeah, it just was perfect.
Yeah.
In terms of, oh, everyone's got the game.
Yep.
It's hot right now. Yep. Let's just suck every last dollar out of every last backer.
The second you started seeing positive reviews out, they were just like, right, get on it now, because people are going to go, what's this that's the number one in the hotness? I don't know, but you can buy it right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So it's been really well done with the Kickstarter campaign. And I know I mentioned before, I get at least two emails a day. Usually one is a new stretch goal that's unlocked, and then one is some other thing. And look, I have to show you this. I don't know if you saw this one, Leon.
Do you get a third email every day from your boss saying, get back to work?
No,
he's given up on those.
Yeah, that's right.
Straight to trash.
They released a stretch goal that unlocked at 6.2 million called augmented reality.
Uh-huh.
And it's a little bit sketchy, but apparently it revolves around an item which is a monocle.
Right.
Where you find this monocle, and then if you look at certain cards, all of a sudden your monocle will need to be loaded on your iDevice or your Android device, because you're going to see things that you can't see on the card by looking through the monocle. They will come alive in some form of augmented reality. So whether you hold your phone over the map, I don't know. It's all very new.
Now, just really quickly, if there is anyone who was silly enough not to listen to your 20-minute verbal orgasm about this game a couple of weeks ago, can you give us the 1 minute or less version about what Seventh Continent actually is?
Yeah, of course. So this is an exploration and survival game set in the turn of the century. The company who made it is Serious Pulp, and it's very much a pulp adventure where you have been to this mysterious seventh continent. You've now come back, but you've got a curse on you, and to get rid of it, you've basically got to go back and wander around the seventh continent, find out what the hell this curse is and how to get rid of it. In the course of doing that, you are basically exploring this board that's made of over 1,000 cards, doing all sorts of actions, and the game really revolves around the actions.
Yes.
And the way you do these action tests is you draw cards from an action deck, you draw a certain number of cards, and you need a certain number of successes. So it's very reminiscent of your Arkham Horror, your Eldritch Horror, but instead of rolling dice for your successes, you are drawing cards and they've got stars or other things on them. And that action deck is also your life force.
For everybody.
Yes, for the party. Life. That's right. So this is 1 to 4 players. Apparently plays really well as a solo. We played it, 3 of us. Then on Tuesday night, Garth and I played it with another 2 friends. So we played it with 3 and 4. Clearly I can see it's going to be a fantastic solo and a 2-player game. So works well with all numbers, I think. But yeah, really revolves around those actions, those tests with the cards, keeping that life deck pumped up,
mm-hmm.
and finding ways to basically put cards from the discard pile back into the life deck.
Now, I just think it needs to be said that for anyone who is listening who is concerned, this is a spoiler-free conversation.
Yes, absolutely.
We are not going to spoil any of the contents of the curses that is essentially each scenario that you're going to be playing. This is more a conversation about our experiences, mechanics of the game, which are certainly not secret.
Yeah.
And basically Mark just having more opportunity to just talk
Except
about this
we
game.
We have to talk about that time we were attacked by the demon honey badger, though. We have to talk about that. That's not a spoiler. That's not
No.
Actually, it could be a spoiler. Maybe it isn't.
Maybe
game.
It is. I don't know anymore.
That'd be great if it was.
So this is very much one of those games where the core rules are very simple,
mm-hmm.
but they do a really good thing, again, along the sort of the computer game line of unraveling the story, and but also unraveling new actions, new things you can do through the cards. I think I talked about last time about how there's sometimes secret numbers on the cards.
Yep.
There's the fact that the details in the art you have to really pay attention to, because it could be the fact that there's a certain plant or something on the card that doesn't get mentioned, but later on you find that, oh, if that plant's on the card, that lets you do something in particular. I don't know why, but botany plays a big part in the game, and one of the characters is a
botanist. You're on this strange, crazy continent with weird new plants.
Yeah, and weird new animals, and, of course, part of it is surviving, and you have to find things to eat.
Yes.
And, you know, so you have to hunt, you have to trap, you have to kill things. Some of these things are trying to kill you. Look, it's just, as I said, the mechanics are fairly simple. Again, sometimes cards introduce things which have you sort of scratch your head and go, how does it quite work? But I love that basically on the website and in the rules, it basically tells you, look, if you're not sure, think about the theme and what works for you. It has that sort of loose rule, which a lot of these very story-based games do have, although there are the frequently asked questions, and there's lots of forum posts on the website, theseventhcontinent.com, and also on Board Game Geek. So there's lots of support material out there, but of course you have to be really, really careful because it's so spoilerific.
Yeah.
Now, we played the first scenario, or part of the first scenario. Now, we actually played it twice. And
that's how well we played it.
This is the thing that I, you know, was wondering about is, well, what's the replayability like? So we played 2 or 3 hours of the first scenario last week after the show. Didn't have much success, must admit. And basically we died at the end of that session without ever getting off
something.
A little island that sits off a bigger island. And, you know, you can, that's not a spoiler because you can see that on the map that the curse gives you a clue, which is a map, and gives you a rough idea of where you want to go.
Yeah, we were playing the opening first hours of the curse they recommend you start playing the game.
Correct.
With.
So, the ravenous goddess?
I believe it's the
goddess. The voracious goddess.
That's the one.
She was one of them. Yeah. Depending on the day, hungry. To be perfectly honest.
And so that was hilarious. You know, we clearly missed a whole bunch of sort of clues and didn't do that well. We played the exact same scenario again, mind you, with, well, particularly one person who's very observant and very focused and very mip-mop,
yes,
computer-ish.
He's a robot wearing a human
suit. That's right.
Yes.
And, amazing to say, we had a very, very different experience with the same area and then more because we survived and continued our adventure for a bit longer. And I was concerned, well, what's going to be like playing that other part that we'd already played again? I loved it. I absolutely loved it again. And we did enough different things that it wasn't even really that similar.
No, that's true. I mean, overall, the map layout in both scenarios ends up being the same because you are constructing this continent. However, the encounter cards that you place out before you reveal what the next bit of terrain is are randomised.
Yes, that's
right. So you're always going to have this different encounter, which is essentially the pretext to I need to do this thing before I'm able to discover what's over the next hill or up this cliff or whatever the case may be.
And even with the map cards themselves, so the large part of this game is numbered cards, and it tells you put out card X, Y, Z, and it'll be part of the map. With a lot of those, there are multiple versions of those. Now, sometimes it's because you find a part of the map, you do something else which lets you see more, so then you swap that card with another one. But other times it's actually that there are 4 or 5 or 6 versions of that card. You shuffle them and you draw one, which really does add to the replayability.
Yeah, because the important stuff they make sure to give you access to, but whereas the other stuff that's not so important, they make it randomised so it can be a little bit different every time.
Yeah, totally. So that combination of map cards and your encounter cards just really means that you're almost having a unique game every time. Yes, there are those certain elements, as you said, the ones you can't miss, because if you do miss, you won't be able to progress, but all the rest changes up heaps.
That and there's 7 curses, which all start you at a completely different map tile, which then lead to other completely different map tiles. So it's one of those things that some people could argue, oh, you play through it once. But, you know, any, like, long RPG video game, you could easily play through it again years later. And there's 7 of them, for God's sake. So it'll be a while before you come across something you've seen before.
Yeah, it's true. I must admit, though, having now played the first couple of hours with the two of you guys and then playing another three and a half hours, maybe, a couple of nights ago, we are on the session a couple of days ago, halfway, maybe a third of the way only through the first scenario, at best.
I think so. I've seen it, people saying that sort of if you play it and don't do too much sidetracking, it's probably 10 to 15 hours for the full scenario. So I'd say we're probably, if we're lucky, a third of the way through this first curse. So as Leon said, I think there's 5 curses in the first game. The new expansion in Kickstarter has 2 more curses, plus I think another one's been unlocked in the stretch goals. potentially maybe another one. So I think...
I think there were seven in the base game and now there's two more. I think there's nine now.
Yeah, or I think another stretch goal one has been released other day.
Oh, God.
So I think you're now up to maybe at least 10 curses.
Now, my concern is, though, we are halfway or a third of the way through a campaign. If we were to die, we have to go back to square one, tile one, reset the whole thing. And the 5 or so hours that we've played already, you're resetting and you're going straight back to position one. That is brutal.
Yes.
That is so difficult. And that, for me, is something that I just go, bloody hell, this is almost a one-shot because, personally, I don't want to go and play this same scenario for another couple of hours, die, and go all the way back to the same one right at the start, which is essentially the first third of it is a bit of a tutorial, like you said, Mark. That's a hell of a first scenario to get into.
Yeah, it's the same as how we said with time stories. When you die in that or run out of time in that, by the time we did that 2 or 3 times and you know the map off the back of your hand, you know exactly what you've got to do and where you've got to go to.
Yep.
Some part of you just wishes there was some sort of app or some sort of program you could put into that. This is what we've done, this is where we died or this is where we stopped. Where can we restart from a certain place? And they just go, oh, okay, just take these 20 cards out of the deck and put these map tiles back and start from there.
Well, I could certainly see. So the area where we got up to now was like a sort of an auto save point where it basically says, if you want to save the game, this is a really good spot.
Yes.
Because we did something and we moved from one area to another where we basically start with one tile. So it's us on one tile and nothing else. So for me, that could be a really easy restart. And I think there's only maybe 4 or 5 cards that you've actually banished from the game. And I mean, maybe there's a slight possibility that if you shuffled it all back in, they might come back, but probably not.
But do you restart your action deck?
That's the concern.
That's the thing.
The problem is you have already... You can't tell how many cards you're going to churn through your action deck, which is your life point.
And also which ones, depending on which characters you choose as well.
Mm.
So there's going to be different ones in there.
I'm sure there are gamers out there who will be figuring this out for us, which is great. So thank you very much in advance. Because we have seen a couple of those essentially restart points where it tells you, take away the whole map.
Yes.
Just stick with this new card that you're on. Reset, shuffle things, banish them some things, do this. But none of those are, and just refresh your whole action deck and you're starting fit and healthy again.
Yep.
So and there are always going to be, I'm starting this next phase, but I'm starting already with less life than any other one.
You could literally say at the bottom of that card could have a sentence that says, if you wish to restart here later after death or whatever, just take 20 cards out of the deck and then go from there.
Although, you know, look, it's so interesting because at the same point in the 2 games that we played, on the first game we're completely out of action and we die.
Yeah.
In the second point, we had managed it so well. I think out of the, let's say the action deck might be 40 cards. I can't remember exactly what it is. We only would have had
60, I want to say, I think.
Okay. Well, we would have had less than 10% in the discard pile. We'd done such a good job of putting cards back in, of hunting and doing other things, that it's almost like we could start from scratch there.
Which is all part of the exploration, which is the fun of those games. But as Garth said, if you guys then died again, you wouldn't want to go back and do that again.
No. Now, what we're going to do, because we've already been talking for way too long, is we're going to go to a quick song. We'll come back. We'll keep talking a little bit more about this before we continue on with the show. But we've already been talking for long enough without music, without a break, without just a reset. That's what we've talked about, a reset.
Well, you know this game actually has a soundtrack that you can download from their website.
Yes, and we played it for precisely 1 minute during the game before someone said, can you turn that off? It's annoying. So you are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This week, proudly presented by Area 52. We're going to go to a really quick song and we'll be back after this. Well, that was a quick song, wasn't it? That was Nick Murphy with Bye.
That was super quick.
You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, we're going back to the Seventh Continent. Mark.
So, I don't know. Where do we start, Garth? Where do we continue from?
Well, look, let's switch this into a bit of thoughts and a bit of conversation because Look, comparing this to another big storytelling game that we've played recently in This War of Mine.
Yes.
Now, This War of Mine, we dedicated the better part of two-thirds of a show to,
mm-hmm.
and we talked about its adult nature, its feeling of stress and being in that war-torn environment that you are just flung in the middle of. You just can't get out, and all you are doing is being that player who's stuck between fighting factions or warring looters or whatever the case may
be.
Very,
very immersive, absolutely.
Whereas this one is that choose-your-own-adventure, rollicking good time, thrown in with really, really heavy consequences for failure. And by that I mean, if you die, you are resetting the whole thing.
Yes.
And that is a massive concern. So the couple of things I've written down about this are that it cannot be overestimated, I guess, how important it is to feed or to hunt.
Yes.
Now, feeding or hunting without giving anything away is how you take cards from the discard pile and put them back into your action deck.
It's the major way. There are other ways, but it's the major way.
That is a massively important way.
Yeah.
So tip number one, eat as much as possible. Hunt as much as possible.
Yeah.
And in that vein, maybe get some fire, should that be able to present itself, because having cooked food is a little bit more better than having raw food.
Yes, definitely.
So that's a big thing. The second thing I wanted to talk about is how you guys feel about these secret numbers and the secret things on the cards, because that's something that, again, it has a pretty crucial gameplay element that can be easily overlooked if you're playing with three or four marks and they've all forgotten their glasses and no one can see the cards without them being blurry. It is massive.
A couple of beverages and you're upstairs in a local beverage establishment, not paying particularly close attention.
So I enjoyed this game, but I'm concerned that something like that can potentially ruin hours and hours of enjoyment,
mm-hmm.
because something like that can potentially derail your whole campaign.
It's a gamble, that's for sure. And it goes back to like a video game trope that is one of those things that you always want to make crystal clear kind of where you're going next, unless it's a kind of game where specifically it's about exploration and they won't tell you.
Yep.
But in this game, they do kind of encourage they kind of lead you along a little bit, saying you should kind of go here or maybe you should try and do this. So as you said, if it's a very big key thing that is on something you could very easily miss, yeah, it's not ideal.
Well, so obviously the clue for the curse, or at least the one we've seen, has a very sort of rudimentary map. So we know, okay, we sort of got to go in this direction, then we sort of got to go in this direction, and we have a few times we were like, do we think that means north? Do we think it means east? Does it sort of mean you go left of the hill or right of the hill or whatever? But I think that's good because there's clearly room to do your own thing. I actually loved... gave you a couple of hints in that scenario mission, like, oh, you start on this very little island. It's quite barren. There's probably not enough food here to survive for more than a couple of days. So it's really a big hint of you need to get through this reasonably quickly. You can't just sit around here forever because you're not going to find that much food.
Correct.
And that's probably something we didn't take notice of when we played it the first time, and we certainly did. But the second thing that I loved in the second game, now, did we mention this game comes with a magnifying glass, which is, you know, like a plastic one that's basically the same size as a card? I loved that after we got into it a little bit in the second game where we're doing well, we were pretty much every time a new map card came out, everyone was taking the opportunity, or at least two of us were, to scour that card with the magnifying glass, looking for the hidden number, looking for perhaps the hint of botany that might be there, looking at, oh, there's some footprints or some animal tracks, or what's that funny little mark on the ground there, and trying to zoom in really well. Like, we were scouring that card, and it really comes through in the theme of the game because all those little hints are telling you something. It might be significant. It might be a red herring. But Oh, I found that fascinating.
It should almost actually be in the rule book that they might want to say, you might want to house rule this however you want to play it, but it might be worth whoever draws a certain card has to look at it with the magnifying glass to kind of see what's there.
Oh, look,
if it's that important, it should definitely be a thing that people should be a lot more noticeable.
Well, without doing any spoilers, it is that important.
Okay. Yeah,
that's how it is.
Yeah. Now, and we even had the case where it was probably the two of us where you'd looked at it and I went, yeah, Garth found this and this, but just give us a look at it here, Garth. I just want to check. And now, vice versa.
On that note, I think the botany side of things is really, really cool because you will discover cards during the course of your adventure that have direct references to certain plants or certain things that you find. And it might say, if you find a card that has this so-and-so on it, you can do this thing. So there is incentive to be looking rather than just the incentive of, oh, I need to look for some numbers.
Yeah.
You're doing it because there are other really unique mechanics that make it more of an investment.
And now, it even hints around, okay, I really feel like we need to find some food. Oh, there's some animal tracks. That might be a place to go and look to try and find some food.
Correct. Okay. Now, next thing that I'm concerned about again, and this is, still only 5 hours in,
yes,
is with the level of seriousness around making mistakes,
yep,
burning through your cards, dying. This is an adventure game where, unfortunately, the penalties are so strict that it is encouraging you to just streamline your play. And really, as quickly as you can, you want to be getting from A to B because there are these reset points that we've talked about, yep, where A to B might be getting to a point, all of the cards go out, shuffle some things again. You're certainly not touching your action deck because that's your life. But then you go from B to C and C to D and so on and so on and so on. But it's an adventure game that is almost in that regard discouraging you from doing big, crazy explorations because every time you explore, you're going to be burning through cards to be doing certain things. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I thought the one when we played the tutorial, which we failed, so failing a tutorial was, is nearly impossible in a lot of things, but we managed it. But
oh, we're special guys.
I don't think we did anything overly that stupid, and we were trying to, at times, trying to be a bit smart with our cards. We weren't being silly, but we did end up losing because we lost all our cards. And my thought process was, okay, if we get to the next bit and then like whole deck gets reset, then that's kind of cool. If correct, not, I don't think we've screwed up enough to be punished for we get to a next place and you've got three cards left, that's the end of the story.
Yeah.
But if that's what you're telling me would have happened if we'd got to the next place, that's not really cool at all.
Yeah, well, look, the thing is with that tutorial is in order to fix what we had done wrong, we would have burned through our cards anyway.
Mm. Look, my point on the map, what you're saying, Garth, is it could be that sandbox where, like I did and like I do on so many video games where I get bored, I just wander off in some direction and see what I find. The game doesn't want you to do that because what you've got to remember is this whole thing is set on this seventh continent. And this is just one curse. You don't want to discover 100% of the island doing one curse. And actually, it'll be, you might have a bit that crosses over in the next curse, but another bit that goes to a whole completely different area. So I think it's fine that, not that it's streamlining you, because you've still got to, from what we've seen, you've still got to do quite a bit of exploration to sort of work out where we've got to go, what we've got to have with us to get to the next section. I really love that.
Well, that's the thing. You can't say in this game, oh, let's just explore around a bit and then go after our main objective. Because it's not like a video game where there is a big old star on the map and you think, I'm just going to walk around for half an hour, then go to that star.
Yes.
Because this game does not tell you where that star is.
Yes. Correct.
So you do have to explore. But if you explore a certain amount and kind of get punished for it, it's a very difficult swing either way.
And one of the things it did do really well was with those, is it the event cards or the cards that you put out before?
Yes, event cards, yeah.
The cards that you put out around your existing card to go, okay, well, I'm going to explore in north, south, east, or west,
yep,
is that there are certain grades of those. They go from level 1
yeah,
up
one
to level
up to
7. 11, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Even more now, I think, with the expansions.
Yeah, there would be. Yeah.
So you will reveal a tile and you'll explore this card, and rather than being connected to level 2 encounters, it might have level 7 or 8 or 10 or 11, and that's how it's dissuading you from going that way. It's basically a big red flag saying,
I don't think you should go that way. You will die horribly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So that's a video game trope as well, which is fine. You walk into a little area and a guy has 10 times the health you've ever seen. Yes, yep. You know to go back. So that's kind of clever. If I put that in there, that's good.
Okay, now I'm going to address the elephant in the room. Yes. Mark. Solo. This game with you.
Yes.
With our friend Oren, who played it with us on Tuesday night.
Yes.
Is arguably the number one solo candidate. Both of you have said in glowing terms, I don't need friends and family. If I have nothing else, I'll have Seventh Continent and I will play it by myself happily because it's just that kind of game. Clearly, it is a great choose-your-own-adventure style and clearly we know it scratches all kind of itches that just ointment doesn't fix. But is this the first great solo game? I mean, what is it that's making this game scratch that itch for you so much?
Yeah, and I mean, for me, it's an expansive story. It's so thematic and the simple mechanics. So you get to focus on the story because the mechanics are simple. It's sort of rinse and repeat with these actions. Look, I must admit, I'm more excited about playing this with my significant other particularly as it's something we could play just for an hour. Sit down, get it out, quick little reset, play for an hour and pack it away again. And it's, you know, it's a couple minutes to set up, couple minutes to pack away. Instead of watching an episode on Netflix, we'll do that. And I think that could be a really fun activity that we do. I think I'd rather do that than solo, but I still think I could have a huge amount of fun with this solo.
You certainly could. And for solo, you would not need to get another solo game any soon.
No.
But you can't beat the feeling of doing things with friends, the turning over a card and then, that kind of jazz. That's why we play the games we play.
Maybe I need a second version.
All right, we need your own solo version. We need to call time on this. We've used up too much time. So, look, it's pretty clear to say, yes, we're fans of this game.
Yeah.
There is no other game that's like it. Be amazing to see if there's a copy at PAX.
Oh.
Might just tune up the whole weekend. Speaking of which, we're going to go to a song and then, Leon, you might come and tell us all of the exciting things to look forward to in a week's time.
I may just do that.
So, it's the Dice Men Cometh. This week, we're proudly presented by Area 52. We're going to go to a song, then Leon's going to come back and tell us all about what we can look forward to at PAX. We'll be back after this song.
That was Mere Women, although they shouldn't talk themselves down like that. Mm. With Come Back here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. Brought to you tonight by our very good friends and our friendly local game store, Area 52, 104 Elizabeth Street in Hobart. And, of course, what happens on Thursdays?
We talk about pop furry things. What are they?
It's comic book day.
Oh, okay.
And speaking of comic books, what about that Marvel Legendary expansion with the movie art for Spider-Man Homecoming? I wasn't here the week you guys talked about it.
Oh, the hate.
Yeah, Leon's still not a happy camper.
Oh, I saw a post today from Upper Deck about it, and literally same thing again, 100 comments of just people going, screw you, I'm out.
Well, anyway, you can get your Marvel Legendary from Area 52. You can get your DC deck builders, and of course you can get the comics to match.
Yes. Exactly. Now, enough about comics.
Yes.
We're talking about PAX.
PAX.
Yes.
Leon.
Hello.
What's this PAX
thing? PAX is the Penny Arcade Expo, which is mainly about video games, but it's all sorts of nerd love and funsies. So if you haven't been to it before, I highly suggest you to if you can get to it.
You can get tickets.
Yeah, by this point you probably can't.
Jesus.
You probably maybe can, but anyway.
75% of all of Friday's tickets sold out as of today, I heard.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. So next week, October the 27th to the 29th, we shall be there for loads and loads of funsy. I'm just going to tell you about some of the fun things that are happening. There's the Omegathon, which is an entire PAX-length video game tournament.
Wow.
Which starts with 20 people, and by the final day, there will only be two left.
Oh, they have this every year, don't they?
Yeah, so they're playing all sorts of different video games from all different sorts of systems. These people, I'm sure, have been training hard for God knows how long on these games that are probably rubbish, half of them.
So this is just 20 people who will play
whatever games they're told to play. Is that right? Do they know what they're playing?
No, I didn't think that either, but it actually does say on the schedule what they're playing. Okay. I don't know. I would totally just leave it up to the imagination, personally. Just leave it and just kind of see what happens. But apparently that's what's happening.
That's cool.
And not only the fact that there is literally 100 different exhibitors from different video game companies showing all the stuff that's coming out for the next years or so. That's the bread and butter of the convention. But there's also a massive tabletop contingent, which is why we are going.
Yep.
Sorry, I completely lost train of thought. And it's about one-third the size of the entire convention center.
Yeah, does that say what I think it is? Tabletop is massive.
Is it a Megathon? Isn't that the one?
A Megathon, yeah. And round three says Sushi Go.
Yeah.
And then after that's Miss Pac-Man. So, and Arms. So, yeah, so there's a cardboard gamey thing in there. We might have to go have a look at that bit on Saturday, 5 o'clock. We might be able to swing that before we go for a pint at the pub.
I reckon.
Anyway, so that sounds pretty cool. So, yes, as I said, the tabletop section is massive, one-third the size of the entire convention center, which is huge. Mm. And we will be there because we will be helping teaching people games and whatever else because that's the kind of nice guys that we are.
I'm not teaching anybody.
You might just do. Who knows? You never know. So before we get to what Garth's doing, because I'm sure he wants to talk all bloody about that, we'll talk about other stuff. So they've got other bits of entertainment as well. So they've got the comedian Michael Hing and his comedy cavalcade.
Mm.
That should be a good laugh. They've got musical guests. They've got an entire concert on the Saturday night featuring such acts as Square Sounds, MC Frontalot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's the original nerdcore hip hopper.
He was a big deal. I saw they put out a whole bunch of advertising saying, we got him. Yes. He's going to be there.
Yeah, he was the biggest name announced for that. And also another band that I saw today, Birdman, or The Unexpected Virtue of a Tony Hawk Pro Skater Cover Band. Which, I mean, it's a great name, and the music in those video games was amazing, so I'm down for that.
I think Tony Hawk is either 18 or 20 years old, the game, since it's
first
released.
Yeah, well, PS1 would be close to about 20 years old, and they can't get it right anymore, so you should go back and play those old ones, because the new ones are horrible. There's all plenty of pin trading, which is a huge thing at all these conventions.
Yes.
People like to get their pins for reasons best known to themselves. I don't really know, to be perfectly honest.
Same reason people want to get Funko Pops, hey, Mark?
Yeah, I suppose.
Of course. Same kind of collectible.
So exactly. Anyway, speaking of board games, as we do, there will be tournaments running for all 3 days of the biggest kind of, you know, games that most people know. So you've got your King of Tokyo, which I'm trying to convince the wife to go into that tournament.
You should go into that, Leon.
Well, if I have time to, I'd happily do it. But she wins all the time, so I'd rather she goes in. There's
came
also
second with you, though, I guess.
It's true. There's also Splendor, Carcassonne, Dominion, Settlers of Catan, Seven Wonders. I'm sure Trent would be up for that, but he's not going, so I'm sure someone else will probably win. Star Wars X-Wing, Ticket to Ride. So tournaments for 3 days straight of all those types of games.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool. So you're not short of a game to play. There's all the new games there you can play and rent from the library, as well as all those tournaments going along.
And, of course, such tabletop experts as us there to teach you games, a massive tabletop library, so you can come and check out a game, go and play it. Heaps and heaps of table space.
And there's also heaps of retailers right there at the same time. So if you're looking to buy something you just played or to pick up something new, there's plenty there. And all good friends of ours that have been there for a few years, so they know what they're doing.
And the other thing is people like Rule and Make, people like the Tabletop Game Developers Association are going to be there. As you said, quite a few of the local retailers, other little card games that you sort of don't hear of, people are there selling those, all sorts. I mean, and then there's dice people, then there's, I can see his sword craft. I don't know if that's boffer weapons.
I don't know.
Or real swords, maybe.
We will find
there's
out.
There's always a lot of crazy stuff. And don't forget your cosplay. Yep. Always lots of cosplayers all around.
Yes, with the thousands and thousands of people. So what else have we got? So we've got Acquisitions Incorporated. That's that big international
D&D game
RPG thing, which people are big fans of.
Yeah.
There's also something which caught my eye, which is a a speed mini painting contest for Reaper miniatures, which is paint an entire miniature in an hour, and then you get judged and stuff on it.
Is that speed painting? I've never painted a miniature. Is an hour, is that quick, is it? I don't know.
That's insane, considering you to paint like one little unit can take several hours. It's the reason why I never got into those games, because I got all excited about it and went, I love everything about this, and then painted like one and went, I don't have all this time in my life. Yes. I'd have to give up all the other hobbies and, you know, family and
stuff. That's why I just give them to people and say, paint those. Yes. I don't care what they look like, but I'll trust you.
Yep, and there's various other events that are going on. There's one that I found called And Yet She Rolled Again, which is a room set up for about 2 hours, all for women who love board games.
Cool.
Which I think is pretty cool, and it's a cool name as well. and also, obviously, there's lots of different panels and stuff.
Are there?
We'll get to that. Shut your mouth. There's a Penny Arcade Q&A with Gabe and Tycho, so the fellas behind this whole damn thing, and they'll be answering all your questions and whatnot, so just be nice to the fellas. They put this on for us.
Yep.
There's The Great Debate.
Oh, really?
No, hang on, a different one. Oh. Watching people play games is more fun than playing them yourself. So that's about the video games and this massive culture of like people watching YouTube,
Twitch and all that
kind of jazz, as opposed to actually like playing it themselves. Riot Games are presenting Mechs versus Minions Live. I don't know what that is, but I saw it on the schedule and went, ooh, hello.
Yeah.
Which also means maybe they might have some copies for sale.
I was just thinking, yes.
And I happen to be bringing a suitcase, but the wife says that I can have some of the room in. Anyway, so there's that. There's also Dungeon Crawl, which is the very popular Australian RPG podcast. They're going to be there as well, doing a live show, which is pretty cool. And then finally, on the Friday night at some ridiculous hour.
I believe 9:30 p.m.
At
the Fruitbat Theatre.
There's something that, Garth, you might as well tell us. I mean, your first name on the bloody list of panellists, so you might as well tell us. What's this all about then?
So this is the Great Tabletop Debate.
Nice.
So it was, look, let's call it a little bit of a success when Mark was on there last year. You know, it didn't quite fill out the Fruitbat Theatre, but geez, it went close.
Yeah.
It was very chockers.
Yeah,
so there
was definitely about 400 people there.
There were hundreds and hundreds of people there. And look, most of the people were funny. And there was Mark. So that was good.
Yeah.
So your topic, what was it? Is it the board gaming bubble? Something about
that? Yes.
Is there a board gaming bubble and has it burst?
So look, we're taking sort of the next step from that and really having a conversation about classic games versus all these crappy new games. Which ones are better?
Yes.
Fantastic classic games that we all grew up with and we loved, or these new fandangled flesh in the pan, no one has time for them.
I guess we can work out which side you're on, Gar.
So yes, believe it or not, I'm on the against side, so I'm going all for the classics, not these new ones.
So you're on the pro Monopoly side.
Shut up. So look, I'm very lucky to be on the panel with good friend of the show and Dice Lady Tanya, who is there as art director from Jellybean Games and obviously knows a lot about gaming and RPGs. Dan May, who is an art director and creative director of Game Salute, and he's been involved in Black Orchestra and a few other games that have been out lately, so he knows his stuff and was on the panel with you as well, Mark, last year.
Yes, he was.
We've got Alex Winter from The Brigade, which set Kickstarter on fire a few months ago. I'm sure he won't use that in his undoubtedly disappointing conversation, because he's on the positive side. Love you, Alex. And then we've also got Derek from GoTo Games, and he's going to be talking some really intelligent conversation because he's on my team. And then we've got Anna Zhu from Defiant Development, who is obviously part of Hand of Fate and Rule and Makes sort of mixture between the board gaming and the video gaming space.
Yep.
So that'll be great. I think it'll be a lot of fun. We will have some very interesting viewpoints, no doubt. And yes, 9:30 p.m. Friday night. Be there and be square.
So is Tanya on your team or not? She's on the other side. We've got a dice person on either side. And we are 33% of the one big board game.
Exactly right. Wow. So that's going to be pretty
exciting. We've made it. Kind of.
So look, last year, the lineup was really, really long.
Yeah.
So it was big, it was popular, and it was a lot of fun. So I would strongly suggest...
Look, there are tickets still available for the Friday.
Oh, fantastic.
You can't get three-day passes anymore. The tickets are... There's not many left for the Saturday, but Friday and Sunday you can still purchase.
And for each day, they're $65, which for an entire day of all this craziness... is brilliant.
And the particularly opportunity because to meet a dice man.
I was going to say, on the Friday and the Saturday, although there's not that many left, you know, it's a really long day, so it goes it's to about
12 hours
midnight,
or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 10 to 10, and then on Sunday it's 10 to 6 or something. Yeah.
All right. So clearly we've talked about the big stuff. We're going to go to a song. If you're interested about the panel, please ask me. I'll tell anyone who cares. But yeah, after this, we're going to have a little bit of a chat about Kickstarters and sometimes when they just don't quite make it. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Thanks, Area 52. We'll be back after this song.
Well, that was The Nature of Monkey by Last Faction here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, proudly presented tonight by Area 52, our great friends. And look, we know a bit about board games. Those guys know quite a lot and are happy to direct you towards what might be a good game for my friend who likes golf or my friend who likes poker or whatever. They are always very helpful there.
Correct. Thanks, Tripitaka. So, look, I just wanted to have a really quick conversation about something that has happened in the gaming space not too far away, and that is good friends of the show, Rule and Make, who had their Terminator Kickstarter...
Terminated.
Now, this was of their own choice, because we've talked about this game, and in fact, you would have heard some advertising about it over the last couple of weeks. And in previous instances, Rule and Make have bloody kicked ass on Kickstarter space. We look at Hand of Fate and the hundreds of thousands of dollars it got. Was it $460,000?
Oh, yeah. Yep, based off a video game that... I mean, a lot of people have heard of now, but at the time, not as big as it is now.
Pretty sure more people have heard of Terminator.
Yeah.
Now, this was a campaign that has the backing of Rule and Make.
Mm.
It has the game design of Ian O'Toole, who is obviously most well known as being an artist and graphic illustrator for a lot of Vital Lacerda's games. But anyone who's listened to our show knows we're big fans of his and friends of his, which is wonderful. It's also got design from an art and a game design point of view from a lot of sort of luminaries in the Australian gaming industry. But really interestingly, from the get-go, this Kickstarter just sort of went, hey! And it didn't get anywhere near what Rule and Make was going for, which admittedly was only a $50,000 success target. However, day one, and I'm putting it out there, I was backer number three. So I was really excited for this.
And I was on board. I think you're on board, Leon, weren't you?
This game went up to $30,000 after 24 hours, everything happy days. And then it stopped.
Mm.
And it didn't get past $33,000. It ebbed and flowed, but really it went up and down and up and down.
So we saw quite a few days where it went backwards.
Correct. Now, look, the initial comments in the actual Kickstarter page were initially... Have you guys got the license for this? Rule and Make, are you sure that you've got the rights to be able to release licensed product in the Terminator space? And they were very quick to address that and say, yeah, we've got this Studio Canal who owns the rights. They've given it. We've got this. It's all good. Don't worry, guys. It's legitimate.
Is this based off that other game that was on Kickstarter?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought
that's
so.
That's right. And understandably, whenever you have a licensed product going into the crowdfunding space of something like Kickstarter, immediately people are a little bit more... aware, because almost everyone has heard of a horror story of a licensed product that just gets stuck or cancelled or something goes wrong because they haven't crossed their T's and dotted their I's. So that was the first thing. The other one was that they, being Rule and Make, hadn't released gameplay videos. They'd done their video of this is what the game is, but it was the promo. It wasn't an actual Let's Play. It wasn't a Rado. It wasn't an Undead Viking or a Dice Tower review or anything like that. So there was a little bit of questions about that. Anyway, we haven't got much time. What I wanted to have the conversation about is I went to Alan and Alistair of Rule and Make and said, guys, we're going to talk about this because it's a big deal in the Australian board gaming space. Yes. And it's a big deal for Australian Kickstarters, especially with the fact that Hand of Fate was such a juggernaut. It is to this day the number one Australian board game successful Kickstarter.
Well, even that Rule and Make, all their other campaigns have been really successful. Now, some of them weren't that huge, but they run a really tight Kickstarter campaign. And I, for one, would have thought, well, if you want to speak to someone in the Australian gaming space about Kickstarter, who would you go and see? You'd absolutely go and see Rule and Make.
Correct. So, look, all I wanted to do is highlight a couple of key points that Alan, and to his credit, I want to say thanks so much for being so honest with this, Alan, is he sent me over a conversation that he's given me the okay to talk about. So, the couple of key points that he thinks were factors in Rule and Make's decision to pull the funding on this. Now, it has to be said, it's going to go back to Kickstarter. They're talking about a mid-January release. Obviously, they'll go back, they'll reset, they'll address any concerns that were raised, and no doubt it'll be a bigger and brighter campaign in a couple of months' time. So anyway, first thing that they highlighted was a reason was all original artwork and probably more importantly, deviating from the core Terminator 2 plot. So it's different from what usually happens when you've got some intellectual property that you're trying to convert a board game into.
Yep.
The option is almost always, I've got something that everyone knows, I'm just going to replicate that. Oh, I've got the Titanic franchise, I'm going to make sure that I've got a game where we know everyone dies at the end
yes.
and it's a roll of a dice whether Rose saves Jack or whether she lets him go and he sails into the deep blue oceans. So deviating away from the Terminator 2 story was something that, in Alan's opinion, contributed to people being unsure about this whole gameplay. Yep. So that was one thing. Interesting point. Second was bad timing. Now, and I'll just quote him, we've had other creators messaging us consoling on the fact that it was just the wrong time. He used an example of Grim Forest, which is Druid City Games, which had a successful campaign a little while ago with over 7,000 backers.
Yep.
They launched essentially the same day as Rule and Make and got 25 backers on the same day, day one. Now, talking about something like Seventh Continent,
yes, yeah.
there's a very strong argument to say Seventh Continent, which has taken $6.5 million yeah. US dollars out of people, has just sucked out the board gaming dollar. That's all it is.
You don't release a video game on the new Grand Theft Auto day. You don't release a movie on the day a new Avengers comes out. And that's kind of what happened.
But that's it. So, look, that was massive. Obviously, you also had Resident Evil, which was a pretty phenomenal
yep.
one that took another $1 million or so. Then they did highlight the fact that not having third-party reviews and third-party gameplay videos or any gameplay videos was clearly a factor.
Yeah.
Having a dice manipulation game, you need to have some form of information to go. You're going to get lots of dice, but you're not going to roll them. You need to answer the question of what am I going to do with these yes. dice? So, look, that was a good point. Glad they raised that. And then the last thing which I hadn't even thought about was price. Now, they clearly advertise in Australian dollars. They're an Australian company. They're based in Australia. Mm. They advertised 89 Australian dollars, which is around 69 US dollars. However, they were saying that there was a lot of feedback from their American customers saying, oh, I'm not paying 89 US dollars. That's too much for a game.
Yeah.
Their hands up in the air, rant on social media saying, why should I pay 89 bucks? And it was just miscommunication. So look, there is lots of other factors, no doubt. And I'm sure Rule and Make have had a hell of a lot of conversation internally as a team, as a conversation with their distribution partners and what have you. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens over the next couple of months for the reset on this. Main thing is I just wanted to say, life happens. This looks like a great game. I'm really on board. I'm hoping with fingers and toes crossed that there'll be a copy of this at PAX in a week or so.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to see it, love to have a go if that's going to be a possibility. But it's also a pretty clear message that after a massive success like Hand of Fate where they got thousands of backers, those thousands of backers didn't just jump on the next one.
Yeah.
So you've got to make sure you know your audience and you've got to make sure that you get things right for when a launch because, as I think you've said before, Leon, if you are not on that popular list when you search on Kickstarter, which is the one that most people look at,
yep.
no one's going to be scrolling down and down and down and down and down to find it.
Only people like us do a couple of scrolls and even still you don't scroll down four or five times, which is where sadly this game ended up.
So that's it. Look, commiserations to Rule and Make. I'm a big fan of them. I'm friends with them, as we all are.
Yep.
Wasn't right. Hopefully they'll be able to go ahead and make the next campaign bigger and brighter in a couple of months.
But they're definitely smart enough and sensible enough people that they will take nothing but learning from this. They won't tuck the tail and run away and go like, oh, we've failed. No, they will be very clever about what they do.
Correct.
Anyway, we have run out of time again for another episode of The Dice Spin Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We'll be back next week. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Area 52. Thank you so much for listening in tonight. We've had an episode jam-packed with information. No show next week because we will be at PAX. But we'll be coming back after that to tell you all about it. So if you're at PAX, come up and say hello. We'll probably have our Dice Man T-shirts or Dice Man hoodies or Dice Man ugly mugs. That's our faces, not our coffee mugs. There, come and say hello. We would love to chat with you. And apart from that, have a great week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Miss Madsen.